Oh, good morning again, everyone. I normally sit out there with you, and it's testimony that the Lord works in mysterious ways that today I find myself up here. Our reading from Matthew's Gospel, as Dave has already said, is the first in a series, five or six weeks. We've been looking at Matthew before, now we've returned to it. But for the next 5 or 6 weeks, we're looking at chapters 8, 9 and 10, and we'll be considering what some of the key themes are when it comes to following Jesus, when it comes to trusting Jesus, when it comes to putting our faith in him. Today, perhaps, well, particularly today, we're looking at the different ways such a journey might start. So following, trusting, or having faith in Jesus. For many of you, these passages will be really familiar to you. You've read them many times before, and we've just heard them read again, this little chunk. And you may know this passage really well. But my prayer has been, mainly because it's what touched me as I was preparing, was that we would all seek to understand what it means more. Following Jesus isn't just a knowledge check where we go, yep, I knew that, phew, correct. A deeper understanding is what I want, and hopefully you do too. And if these stories are totally new to you and you think, what on earth is this about? They're 2,000 years old. There was a leper and there was a centurion and there was someone's mother-in-law. Who cares? Well, keep asking the questions. Why? Why do I need to care? Because they're important questions to ask. And David, our vicar, is always happy to answer the questions, as are many other people. Matthew tells us that Jesus is announcing a new kind of kingdom and that he was the king. He's announcing it in different ways to different people during his time on earth. Everything in Jesus' kingdom seems upside down. We mentioned earlier in that fun quiz that you did really, really well in, different kinds of empires and kingdoms and things that were set up, and how they went about establishing their borders. Those sorts of empires and kingdoms were all about protectionism, protecting a group of people and a certain way of life, and then maybe expanding borders. And if the neighbouring kingdom got too, you know, big for their boots, you'd chop them up or push forward or whatever it would be. Jesus' kingdom wasn't like that. Jesus' kingdom is for everybody, is for everybody. And also, as we start, let's remind ourselves that putting our faith in Jesus starts from exactly where we are, exactly where we are. It's no special behaviour, no special outfit, no special level of knowledge or academic achievement. It starts from where you are. You hear something about Jesus, you read something about Jesus, you see Jesus lived through the lives of his people. Now, something someone does and says, and why do they do that and why are they like that? And some sort of yearning or intrigue or desire forms inside you as you encounter Jesus and your journey of faith begins. So let's look at these 2,000-year-old stories. We're mainly going to look at the leper and the centurion. It's going to take too long, I think, to go to Peter's mother-in-law as well, to see where their starting points of faith in Jesus came from. And for those of us who are followers of Jesus now, what can we learn about those who are seeking Jesus? So Jesus has said he's a king in many different ways. Matthew's clear on that. A king has power and authority. Without that, you're not much of a king. People just walk away and look for a different king. Even as a baby, people were drawn to him. A few weeks ago, we heard about the wise men, people with no sort of Jewish history. Jesus as a Jew, people of Israel. These wise men had nothing, knew nothing about that. They were drawn by a star to go and find a king. They went to a palace. Well, the king must be here. It's a big palace. No, there's no king. Well, there is a king here, but he's not the king you're looking for. Oh, and they went and found Jesus in a place they didn't expect to find him. And they knelt in his presence and worshipped him. Just before today's passage, if you look in the Bible, in Matthew's Gospel, you've had the Sermon on the Mount. The posters were still flapping in the wind. Sermon on the Mount, 4:30 Tuesday, I expect. Maybe not. But Jesus noticed crowds following him and has decided to deliver his message, his sort of key foundation stone, what he was about. How are people treated in my kingdom? Who's involved? Who's included? And it says, the verse before today's passage, that the crowd were amazed. They were astonished because Jesus had spoken as one with authority, not like those they were used to hearing. Which is interesting when you think of today. Who are we used to hearing today? Do they really have much authority? When we scratch below the surface, where is the authority really? We might have elections, they might be in charge really, but where is the real authority? What's it based on? Were the crowds amazed because Jesus was a brilliant speaker? Quite possibly, I have no doubt he was a brilliant speaker, a brilliant communicator. Why wouldn't he be? He's conveying the most important message ever given to man. Was it because he was huge, huge size and stature, a booming voice, great, general gravitas around him? Maybe. Or was it more likely that what he was saying to those who are willing to stop and listen made sense in the core of their being, to their lives experienced, warts and all, and to their desires and longings deep within them? Maybe that's why he spoke with authority, and it was different to those they'd heard before. So our passage starts, we're finally at the beginning of the passage, and Jesus is coming down the mountain. And how was he going to exercise his power and authority? They recognized it in him. How was he going to exercise it? Was he going to walk the talk? I really hate that phrase, but it does fit. Was he going to walk the talk? Was he going to talk about feeding the hungry, welcoming the outsider, healing the sick, but it would just be talk? Was he going to go off to another meeting about how he was going to set up this new kingdom and keep distant from all the subjects, as it were, of the kingdom? Well, as you can see, the first person he meets coming down from the mountain was a leper. And this man kneels in front of him and says, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. If you are willing, you can make me clean." I'm sure you know this, but if you don't, leprosy back then, kind of different to now in terms of how we understand different types of skin disease. Leprosy back then covered a multitude of diseases, skin diseases. And Levitical codes from 1,000 years before Jesus had allowed priests to declare you sick. Once a priest had declared you sick, you were labelled formally unclean and you were banished from the community. The chattering classes, I read this somewhere, it's really good, would have said that you came from unsanitary conditions, not a place of purity and order. You were spoiled. You were formally, by law, a spoiled, unclean, unwelcome person. You couldn't go to the marketplace. You couldn't go to social gatherings. You couldn't go to places of worship. And the law forbade anyone from touching you. So Jesus is meeting one such person. Well, some of you would have had a taste of this legally banished status in the last couple of years. Sure you have. When you were exposed by a lateral flow test or a PCR test, whatever that stands for, as yourselves having come from unsanitary conditions, when you revealed to have had COVID. So you know a little bit about what it's like to be told to keep away. But this man, this leper, had been told by those who were supposed to be a blessing to all that he was untouchable, unclean, and unwelcome. He couldn't join in even if he wanted to. Imagine that. If you feel unclean or untouchable or unwelcome today for reasons that are deep and personal to you, this story is for you. Jesus' actions then will speak to you today. So this leper says, "Make me clean. Make me clean." He doesn't say, "Heal me." The leprosy he had, one of the skin conditions, declared, made him declared unclean. Well, thoughts are come from your sin, your inner being. There must be something wrong at your core. You need to be cleaned, deep cleaned. This is deeper than skin level. And the parallels are there for us all to see when faced with the cross. The status of all of us who are unclean. And the opportunity the cross presents for us all to make us clean. Well, back to the story. Let's not rush past this thinking it's just another leper story. This was a human being who wanted to be clean. I'm sure you've all been there yourself. And you know what I mean by clean. Clean inside, not just a wash. Clean. He's demonstrating his faith in Jesus, his beginning point, his starting point perhaps. However small, however expressed through desperation, he recognises Jesus is capable of healing him. But he's thinking, will he heal me? Will he heal me? As he kneels before Jesus, you can imagine his followers big crowd behind him. It says there's a crowd following him. Would some of them have gasped? What are you doing? This is a leper. You can't touch him. I know you said this fantastic stuff a minute ago up on the mount. But not him. Not him. It's not for him. This story is not for him. And at the risk of hammering home the point, notice how the leper himself says, if you are willing, if you are willing. He's not certain if what he knows of Jesus is relevant for him. He's not certain. Maybe many reasons for that, but perhaps it's because those with power and authority over him, or those who were supposed to be a blessing to him, had never made his life more bearable or been any sort of good news to him. Fast forward to today. We've got governments and we've got public sector and we've got all these things to help make life more bearable and more comfortable. But does that mean we have no obligation to follow Jesus in this area? None whatsoever. And this is how we see. So this is where we see how Jesus uses his power and authority. He's been healing people before. Matthew's told us he's been healing. And this is where we see it. Zoomed in, close up. Jesus, leper. He exercises his power and authority with compassion. With compassion. That's the same today as it was then. He reached out his hand and he touched him. I am willing, be clean. Be clean. Did Jesus need to touch this man? Technically. Did he need to touch him? No, he didn't. We'll see in a minute, he heals the centurion's servant without even meeting him. So why did he touch him, this untouchable person? Well, most of you know the answer to this. It's because he touches the untouchable. Jesus touches the untouchable. Anyway, let's move on from the leper onto the centurion. So we're moving on to someone now who's an outsider, an outsider. Verse 5. When Jesus had entered Capernaum, a centurion came to him asking for help. Let's pause there for a sec, because that sounds like just an introductory sentence, but there's always more there. Jesus has entered Capernaum, which is like a Jewish community area, as it were, Jewish majority town, and a centurion came to him. Who are the centurion? Most of you know this. A Roman soldier in charge of 100 people. Most of those 100 were soldiers. And apparently, I've done this on my research, a few of them were messengers and scribes and pot washers as well. So he's entered there. And this centurion is stood on street corners, perhaps. A trusted Roman soldier in charge of 100 men as part of an occupying force. So imagine going outside, leaving St. Pat's today, walking to the next junction, and there's 4 or 5 soldiers there from a different country, with a badge of, a flag of a different country on their arm, and they are in charge, really. As you walk past them, you're kind of allowed to go about your business, but you know that they're the ones with authority. Your way of life is just about tolerated. You're just about allowed to carry on coming to St. Pat's and worshipping. But as you walk past, you know that if they wanted to, they could just, flick the back of their hand and knock you over or whatever, and there wouldn't be much you could do about it at all. Imagine that. And that was how it was Rome then, Palestine then, under Roman rule. People of God were allowed to carry on worshipping, but how long would that last? What was the Roman tactic? They weren't quite as pillagey and nasty as the Mongols and the Vikings, the Romans. They were a bit more side by side. But are there any parallels today? Are there any powers today? Are there any outsiders today who run and rule? And they're the real power, and we're just kind of tolerated as the people of God. We're allowed to carry on, but don't get too far out of your buildings. Don't do too much, have too much involvement in the world. We're the power authority. Well, one of these people, one of the representatives of Rome, if you like, whose job it was to set an example to his 100, as it were, and to the other centurions as part of a wider legion, was to keep Rome first and foremost. But what does he say? This man is schooled in power and authority. Verse 6, Lord, my servant lies at home paralyzed, suffering terribly. this outsider, this commanding officer, currently has a useless servant. There's not many chores being done in his house. He's paralyzed. Yet why is this striking? Why, who cares about this? This centurion could have got another servant, I'm sure, somewhere else. Well, it's the compassion he has. It's the suffering of another the centurion is deeply concerned about. This outsider, presumably in front of one or two of his soldier colleagues, it's the compassion he shows for another. The suffering of his servant is what he's worried about. His faith in Jesus, such as it was, remember he's just called him Lord, there's some acknowledgement there. His faith in Jesus, such as it was born out of concern for another. Born out of concern for another. How many wonderfully kind people do you know, do I know, who completely out-compassion you or me? They're brilliant, they're fantastic, they care, they're always keeping an eye out for other people, they're sending cards when they need to, they're delivering stuff for people, they completely out-compassion you and I, and yet seem to have no interest in Jesus at present. I often wonder why that is. Maybe I'm too scared to ask them. So I've no idea how much of the Jewish story or the Jesus story at that point this centurion knew, but he recognised power and authority and the compassion. He understood how authority works. On hearing the centurion's plea, Jesus replies, "Shall I come and heal him?" Or in most translations, it says, "I will come and heal him," which gave me a bit of a head scratch when I was planning this, because "shall I come and heal him?" and "I will come and heal him" seemed quite different. So I'm still scratching my head on that one. But what's clear is that Jesus is willing to meet a request made in faith. Jesus is willing to meet a request made in faith. He doesn't say, "I would come, but you've got a small faith." He doesn't say, "You haven't done a 6-week course yet, so I can't really help you." Faith starts from where you are. It starts from where you are. Jesus recognized faith in this outsider, a true faith. How do we know? Well, it's revealed by his response to Jesus' willingness. So the soldier says, so Jesus says, "I'll come and heal him." And the soldier says, "Lord, I don't deserve you to have you come under my roof, but just say the word and my servant will be healed." He knows about authority, this chap. "I myself am a man under authority, with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go, and he goes, and that one, come, and he comes. I say to my servant, do this, and he does it." The story goes on. When Jesus heard the centurion's response, he was amazed. He was amazed. I don't know how many times Jesus was amazed at one of us, as it were, in the Gospels. I don't think it was many times, 2 or 3 times perhaps. I think I grew up thinking Jesus kind of had to, knew everything and everything everyone was going to say, and had to kind of pretend he was a person to sort of float around. And even though he knew what you were going to say, he had to sort of listen and then respond. This is where you see Jesus the man. Something I'm still trying to get my head around. Jesus the man being amazed by one of us. "Truly I tell you, I have not found anyone in Israel with such great faith." Ouch. So he's got these followers next to him. He's almost turning to them and saying, "You're the people of blessing. You're the people I've come to be amongst. I'm one of you. And yet none of you have as much faith as this outsider, this centurion." That must have hurt. That must have hurt. Have you ever been caught unawares by the faith of someone you assumed, for whatever reason, had little or no faith in Jesus? I know I have. Oh, they're lower down on the faith scale. They come from a poorer country. They haven't got an education. They don't do a proper job. And I've been completely out-faithed by them. And there's 2 ways you can go with the experience. You can big yourself up, either in your own mind, if you're deluded, or to other people, slowly and subtly, of course, by how you present yourself and what a great Christian you are. Or you can be grateful for the experience. Grateful for the experience. What that person has taught you, and acknowledge that perhaps, just perhaps, I'm joking when I say perhaps, maybe Jesus knows what he's doing when he's setting up and bringing about his kingdom. Maybe he does. Finally, then, we have to touch on this. Coming to a close now. Jesus reserves a stern warning for those who consider themselves in the know, for those who think they know God's ways and means and methods of operation. And whenever Jesus delivers a warning like this, it's always to those who are following him or part of his group, part of his original obvious tribe. He always delivers a warning like this to them. I say to you, many will come from the east and the west. It may be wise men from the east, maybe, and this Roman centurion from the west, and the Roman soldier when Jesus was on the cross, remember him? Surely this is the Son of God. He's come from the west. These people will take their place at the feast with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. But the subjects of the kingdom will be thrown into outer darkness, where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Well, that doesn't sound like the place I want to be. In a place of regret, thinking, oh, I thought I knew what Jesus was up to. I thought I knew what following him was all about. And actually, I just built up some facts and never got involved. Sometimes if I feel that my faith has become stagnant or just kind of pie in the sky when you die head knowledge, I often have to remind myself of what Jesus did and what following him involves. Jesus got right in there amongst it, with the outsider, with the unclean, the unwelcome. And I've found that when I've stepped back into those places, that's actually when I know what following Jesus is all about. Anyway, drawing to a close. So what? Who cares? Don't know why I wrote that here. Perhaps we can just take away a humble reminder of what following Jesus is about. The people he interacted with, and the people he chose to spend his time with. We've got this fantastic new building coming at the end of the year, towards the end of the year, hopefully. And many of you looked around it yesterday, without a roof, obviously. And maybe you pictured who was going to be in that building and the sort of activities that were going to take place in there. And that's great. And I hope and pray that it wasn't just exactly the same faces you saw in the old hall doing exactly the same things. I hope you're able to picture maybe some of the people you've seen on the street, on a bus, in the workplace, and some of those sorts of things. Some of the people who currently feel unclean, untouched, not interested, not allowed here, outsiders to our church community. And I hope that as you pictured what we'll do in that new building, some of those faces were there in the building with us. Anyway, I'll end it there.